Chapter 1. It was a sunny, icy late morning in February of 1878, and a solitary figure, lost in thought, strode along one of the pale paths winding through St. James's Park in London. He was a lean gentleman of middling height, with a walking stick clasped behind his back. Aside from him, the park was empty, its grass frozen a stiff, whitish Arctic green, and the ruts in its muddy pathways, made by carriages during a thaw the week before, hardened into solid relief. For a moment he paused to gaze at these random tracks where they had frozen in place, and it occurred to him that human affairs, too, could unexpectedly take decisive shape just when everything seemed to be in flux. The person's name was Charles Lennox, and at that moment he was probably the preeminent detective in all of England, professional or amateur. It was this fact that he had been unhappily mulling during the chilly stroll from his house in Mayfair toward his destination, which was Parliament. The buildings of Britain's seat of government rose unobstructed before him, the splendour of their honey-coloured stone lofted above the softly curving flower-beds and handsome empty trees of the park. He might have come by carriage. Certainly it would have been warmer. But he had chosen to walk. He wished to have a clear head before this meeting. Much of the last 2 months of his life had been dedicated to a dark, violent, and unpleasant investigation, and now that investigation was at its end point, and it was his duty to gather its threads into his fingers. Numerous days had passed during that period in which he saw nothing of his family, not his wife, Lady Jane, upon whose clear-eyed intelligence and unflappable good sense he relied so deeply in the general course of life, nor his older brother Edmund, and never for more than a minute or two in the evenings, his two beloved daughters, Sophia and Clara. Edmund, at least, he knew he would see shortly, for once the prospect brought him little joy. At 1 o'clock exactly, Lennox arrived at a small wooden door, faded and scored, a humble detail in the vast imposing design of Parliament. This was the members' entrance. Lennox had once been a member of Parliament himself, a fling of some 5 years or so with politics, following which he had rededicated himself to the study of crime, and was thereby entitled to use it for the remainder of his days. It was Canfield, one of the post's familiar old porters, who greeted him.
"Mr. Lennox," said Canfield, standing up from his stool, "how do you do? Come in."
"Very well, Canfield, how are you?"
"Cold as charity, sir."
Canfield smiled good-naturedly. He was an open-faced Londoner, cheerful, tall and strong.
"Though, come to think of it, why must charity be cold? Still, my mother always said it on days like this. Cut right along this way, sir, please, and I'll follow along."
Lennox looked at the porter with surprise.
"Oh, I know the way."
"Of course, sir, but I must take you."
Canfield's attitude was polite but definite. He would go. Lennox hesitated for a moment, then merely nodded. The porter removed a ring of keys from a drawer and used one to lock the door to the members' entrance from the inside. Anyone who wished to come in would have to wait in the cold, very annoyed, Lennox thought, or else go round to the public entrance. They would be put out, being a population, the members of Parliament, who were not, as a rule, much habituated to inconvenience. Canfield hooked the keys into the inside of his grey wool jacket, where they hung next to a match safe. They were careful with fire here, Lennox remembered, with a quick feeling of both amusement, the recollection of Guy Fawkes might make anyone a little cautious with matches, and of, well, what? Sanctuary, perhaps? It had been an arduous new year thus far, 1878, but after these weeks of hard exertion, he found himself taken in by Parliament, and it was a more powerful relief than he would have expected, the large, slow-moving, well-ordered ship of state, as unchanging as the tides, welcoming him home. He should have known that whichever porter he'd found here would accompany him, of course, for he was at Parliament, not on any humdrum business, but to see perhaps the second most important personage in Great Britain after the Queen, her Prime Minister, Benjamin Disraeli. With sure footsteps, Canfield led him through the complicated corridors of